Good afternoon. It's Thursday, the 23rd of February 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. Well, we're delighted to say there's a bit of sunshine here in Plymouth, although it's quite cold. I can actually see some blue sky and some quite good reports of the weather across the country. And we need it because things are closing in very quickly in a political sense. And we would say that we are entering some of the most dangerous political times that Britain has ever seen. Mike.
Well, let's get straight on then with Cressida Dick, because Amber Rudd has announced that Cressida Dick is to be the next commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. She was appointed by the Queen following a recommendation from the Home Secretary, so that's all good stuff. We'll talk about what people have been saying about this in a second. She... of course, was heading up the anti-terrorism section of the Metropolitan Police before heading off to the Foreign Office, and we'll talk about that also in a second. Now, the Met Police, of course, largest police force in the United Kingdom, 43,000 officers and staff, a budget of $3 billion. What did Amber Rudd have to say? She said, Cressida Dick is an exceptional leader, has a clear vision for the future of the Metropolitan Police. She said she's delighted that Her Majesty has agreed Amber's recommendation for a rigorous recruitment process which highlighted the quality of senior policing in the country. Cressida now takes one of the most demanding, high-profile and important jobs in UK policing. And so it goes on. Absolutely wonderful stuff, according to Amber Rudd. What did Boris Johnson have to say?
Well, he said congratulations to Cressida Dick. She's a fine woman to, you know, to have at the front, a fantastic officer. And thanks to Mr. Howe for all his work beforehand and setting up Cressida Dick. Of course, common purpose, lady.
Well, we'll get on to that too. So here we go. Sadiq Khan said Cressida Dick's experience and ability has shone through this process. So... undoubtedly, everybody is delighted that she has this job, Brian.
Well, I noticed the Guardian image was Cressida Dick with a nice purple jumper on under a jacket standing by the London Eye. So if we just smile slightly and say there seems to be a lot of symbolism in that image, I think this is the woman to do the job. And of course, she has never been chief constable of any other area in UK. So she doesn't have any experience of being the person at the top, lonely job, running one of UK's police forces. She's just moved straight into the most one of the most powerful jobs in the country.
Of course, she's never been running the entire force, but she has, of course, run individual operations.
Yeah.
And of course, the killing of Jean-Charles de Menezes was one of her greatest achievements, at least that's perhaps how she would say it. She was in charge of the operation which saw de Menezes killed. And as the Evening Standard here is reporting, de Menezes' family absolutely disgusted with the fact that she has been appointed. They said, we had to face a tragedy that no family should ever have to experience, the tragic death of a loved one at the hands of those we entrusted to serve us and protect us. At the helm of the police on that fateful day when Jean was killed, was Cressida Dick. The message of today's appointment is that police officers can act with impunity. The Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police is the most senior police officer in the country, a post that is expected to uphold the highest standards of professionalism, to command public confidence, and be responsible for ensuring that the police act lawfully and are held to account. Well, she was never held to account for that. But nonetheless, she was running anti-terrorism policing with the Met for a while. But if we look at her Wikipedia page, what it says there is that she has been appointed as head of the Met, but she is a Director General of the UK Foreign and Commonwealth Office.
That's a fascinating title, Mike. Fascinating.
Absolutely fascinating. So I went off to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office website, had a look at their governance. And, well, as we can see here, if we search for Dick on that page, we find zero of zero results. So she's not listed there on the management board, not listed on any of the other positions on that page. But there is a separate page of other directorships. So let's go and have a look at that, Foreign Commonwealth Office Directors. And, well, she's not listed here either. So this is very strange. I phoned the Foreign Office, or I wrote to the Foreign Office, and they phoned me back very kindly, and a nice lady told me that Cressida Dick is indeed still a director at the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. And I asked, well, she's obviously moving into a very high-profile, high-powered job now. The two roles, are they going to, is this a non-executive role, or is it, are the two roles going to fit together very well? And she said, I can't tell you any more about the background to Cressida Dick's role at the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. Well, of course, we should have remembered this, but in 2015, the Intercept website was highlighting exactly this problem. Secrecy shrouds the unknown role of top UK government official. This is Ryan Gallagher writing for The Intercept, and he had made the point that he made some Freedom of Information requests to the government asking them about Cressida Dick's role. They absolutely refused to disclose what her role within the Foreign and Commonwealth Office was, and they particularly refused to disclose anything about her her salary.
So well, this is really astonishing, Mike, isn't it, that we have now got we've got the fascist state in front of our eyes. So we've got very powerful people in jobs behind closed doors. We, the public, are not to be told what they're doing. And of course, Cressida Dick is a common purpose leader, and their psychology is they meet behind closed doors anyway. So what is her role? Why do you need a senior police officer working in the Foreign and Commonwealth Office? Are they training with other nationalities? Pick somebody, the Americans or the Israelis. We don't know. This obviously wants a Freedom of Information request.
Well, which will probably be ignored as the intercepts were. But let's just remind ourselves that if she isn't listed on the Foreign and Commonwealth Office website, she is listed on our own Common Purpose Exposed website. There is when she took the Common Purpose course. She took the Matrix course in 1996-97. Well, of course, she grew up in Oxford, where there's been really good policing happening over the years, Brian.
Or maybe not around Oxford and Cherwell Valley College. But let's remember that we've got a police officer involved in what is a quasi-secret society, a society that doesn't declare its members in organisations, whether it's the government or the NHS or the police. And the very same organisation that has been penetrated by paedophiles, so that we've had the disgusting situation with Merseyside and
Matthew Byrne, were the two key ones.
Yeah, Matthew Byrne, who was on the Common Purpose Advisory Board Merseyside. So he was selecting people to go through the Common Purpose course, convicted paedophile, no police investigation ever carried out. And of course, this is the nature of common purpose. It protects its own. And now we have a senior police officer buried in the government, and the government's not going to tell us what she's doing. This is unbelievably dangerous stuff.
And we should also remember, of course, common purpose running courses with children where they were not providing CRB checks, criminal records checks for the people running the courses. So,
But no problem. Cressida Dick moves through that system. And a few comments that we've got in our chat box is that there's been generally a chaotic situation around her particular management leadership style. We've heard that ourselves from Metropolitan Police officers who say that in the force she's been deeply unpopular. She's surrounded herself with her preferred police officers, almost forming a sort of shield around herself so that other police officers find it difficult to engage. So this is a very secretive person wielding immense power. This is the sort of person, Mike, I think could unleash the start of arrests in the middle of the night. And of course, no announcement made to the public as to where people have gone. Mm. Well, are we going to get the truth from our politicians? Probably not. And we've decided to have a little look today at Chris Bryant MP. Now, we flagged up a couple of days ago that Chris Bryant was the man who was saying there is, quote, clear evidence of Russian interference in UK elections. So that's a pretty straight statement. There is clear evidence of Russian interference in UK elections, former Europe Minister Chris Bryant claims. And of course, you highlighted that, Mike, with this slide that we showed. He's saying there's now clear evidence of Russian direct corrupt involvement in elections in France, in Germany, in the United States of America, and I would argue also in this country. So no messing around. He's saying that the evidence exists, the evidence is clear, and it shows that the Russians are getting involved in elections. Well, I decided to tweet out last night. So here we are. I sent to Chris Bryant, who calls himself on Twitter Rhonda Bryant. So, Rhonda Bryant, let the public see your evidence. First day of asking, the 22nd of February 2017. I bet you a new pair of Y fronts, you can't produce any. And, well, I was interested because Mr. Bryant kindly tweeted me back and he said, read the Times tomorrow. Well, just for our viewers, let's remind ourselves as to why I was talking about Y fronts. And just so that there's no misunderstanding, the UK column honours its obligations. We've already bought, this is a triple pack. I think that cost us £12. These are the Y fronts. And we said to Mr. Bryant that if there was evidence, we'd be happy to donate him a new set of Y fronts. Well, let's have a look and see how safe our bet is, because today out popped the Times. I paid for it. That was more money spent, Mike. And what have we discovered? Well, I wasn't the only one challenging Chris Bryant. And I believe, Mike, you were given some information from another one of our viewers.
Well, indeed, who had asked exactly the same question as you and had a response back from... He had a response back from Chris Bryant saying, look at the Times. And so he wrote back to Chris Bryant and said, dear Chris Bryant, thanks for the reply, Chris. I will try and look on the Times website. Can't afford to buy the paper. So imagine what Chris Bryant's reply was. It was, I don't like buying Murdoch either. I don't like buying Murdoch either. I'm told by their journalists they're running a story about Russian involvement in Stoke. And of course, what he's referring to there is the Stoke and Trent by-election, which is going on today. So this is a bit of a flippant reply. But again, our correspondent wrote back to Chris Bryant and said, thank you for the email. I know it doesn't take a lot for me to get confused these days, but you got me this time. So the evidence you have about the election fraud in other parts of the world by the Russians is you're told by Times journalists that they're running a story about Russian involvement in Stoke. So that was the query. And well, Bryant wrote back and said, no, I've seen extensive evidence. I'm told some of this will appear in the Times today.
Right, so, did it. Well, we're now going to have a look, but our challenge was, where is the evidence? We're not interested in hearsay. We're not interested in rumours. This is immensely serious. Russia is being accused. This is a hostile act, Mike, for one nation state to get involved in the internal affairs and politics of another nation state at this alleged level is a hostile act. And that is what Chris Bryant is really talking about. We say to him, where is the evidence? So let's have a look and see what the Times newspaper had to say today. We had to spend some time looking through because I missed it first time round. But here we are. This is the Times, pages 18 and 19. Most of it, of course, is about business rates, as you can see. But if you've got a magnifying glass, down here is a little tiny article. And this is the one we need to look at now, because, Mike, this is going to give us all the evidence we need that Russia is interfering with the elections in UK. So viewers and listeners of UK Column News today, I think you should brace yourselves, because this is some pretty astonishing information. Clearly not evidence. So here's the article, and let's read a bit of it because I think it's important enough to do so. A senior Labour MP said that the party does not want President Putin's backing in the Stoke-on-Trent central by-elections after pro-Russian Twitter accounts turned their fire on the UKIP leader, Paul Nuttall. Dozens of bots or automated social media profiles which have previously had supported the Russian president have targeted Mr. Nuttall as he tries to take the Midland seat from Labour. It then mentions an Alex King. We'll come on to him. And then it goes on to give a quote from Chris Bryant. So let's just have a look at what's going on here. Here's the bit about Alex King, and we'll look at that in just a second. But let's bring up the key quote from Chris Bryant. Last night, Chris Bryant, the Labour MP and former Foreign Office Minister, said, "My working assumption is that the Putin regime seeks to influence anything it can. Frankly, I don't want President Putin's backing, so he can butt out."
That's evidence.
Well, I'm a bit puzzled about this because Chris Bryant said there was evidence appearing in the Times. He has made a working assumption. This is an allegation. This is not evidence. In fact, this is pretty pathetic language from a UK politician. This is not evidence. So was there any evidence in this article? Well, let's get in a bit deeper. Here's the individual subheading or main heading of this article by Henry Zaffman. And here we are. Alex King, a researcher who tracks Russian propaganda, said that the accounts had posted repetitive messages with lots of hashtags, characteristics of a coordinated campaign. One message on Monday was a poster of Mr. Nuttall with the caption, "Don't be fooled. This man wants to privatise the NHS. Another read, "UKIP's Nuttall lied about close friends at Hillsborough. Can this man be trusted?" So apparently, Mike, we are to believe, based on absolutely nothing, that this is Russian government propaganda designed to influence an election. Mm-hmm. Where would this have come from? Well,
can't imagine.
I have to say that I did a smile when the first site to give me a hint as to what was going on here was BBC Trending.
Yes.
Well, of course, we can always trust the BBC, and they were unveiling the mystery of the anti-UKIP Twitter machine. So this is where the evidence is. Let's go into the BBC and let's get into this evidence. So a big headline, and here's this outrageous piece of Russian propaganda, which there's no evidence to say it's from Russia at all. "Don't be fooled. This man wants to privatise the NHS. And then there's some explanation. Why is a strange network of Twitter accounts, usually the source of pro-Russian messages, now pumping out tweets about a very specific British election?" So there's the BBC spin, because there's no evidence. We simply bring in the Russians and create that evidence itself. And on it goes. But the key piece in this section is this little message. It says the network, the Russian network, was initially uncovered by Alex King, an independent researcher who tweets as at Glasnost Gone. King tracks Russian propaganda on social media and was an organizer of the campaign to free a Ukrainian plot.
No pilots.
Pilot, sorry, thank you. Who? So that's Nadia Zavchenko, who was captured by pro-Russian forces battling in Ukraine in 2014. So there's the key, that this person, whoever they are, is anti-Russian in the first place. But according to the BBC, what you're witnessing is Russian government propaganda to influence an election. So if we summarise this, Mr. King is an unidentified independent social media researcher. Okay, this is not a bona fide source. And this is his Twitter page. Of course, there's no photograph.
No.
So this is an anonymous person. And all we know about them is they play at social media and they live in London.
Good.
So we better label this at the top. That the Times newspaper, the BBC and Chris Bryant are calling fake news evidence. There is no evidence here, Mike. So I wonder whether we should be saying to our viewers at the moment, if you feel as strongly about this as we do, then clearly the man to challenge is Chris Bryant. We tried to call his office this morning. We've tried to call the Labour Party press team to say, where is the evidence? And nobody knew. Mm. Nobody knew. So if our viewers and listeners can give us a hand with this, ideal opportunity to challenge Chris Bryant to produce the accurate real evidence to support his assertion that Russia is carrying out a hostile act. Well, why would Chris Bryant want to smear the Russians? Let's have a look at this slide. There's the accusation, clear evidence. We're going to show in a minute that Chris Bryant, of course, acted as head of European Affairs, BBC, very pro-European post, also involved with the European Labour movement. The president is Kinnock of that movement. This is a highly pro-European movement. Now, let's bring in this document, Brexit, which is about security, the security dimension. And this was put forward by a Conservative MEP. We showed this the other day, but we've got Chris Bryant there trying to smear the Russians. Why might he do this? Well, I think the clue's in this document, because on the right-hand side, it says very clearly that for Putin and Trump to reach an understanding, a rapprochement, would mean a European nightmare. Europe, the European Union, does not want there to be any friendship with Russia, because pointing a finger at Russia allows the European Union to say, well, we need to big up our military forces. We need to create a single powerful state. So my guess is, Mike, that what's really going on here is this is a massive, desperate attempt to smear the Russians in order to cause trouble, not only in the West, but also, of course, with the United States. So what sort of man is Chris Bryant? Well, when I went to look at his website, it unfortunately told me that I was blocked. I can't imagine why that would be the case. But luckily, somebody else was to get through. And we were fascinated to see that he was retweeting this one, where a Labour MP, Albert Owen, is saying, simply not true. And in an age of fake news, we'd expect an Oxford professor, Oxford professors to deal in facts and do some basic research. So I did call Mr. Owen's office and said, I think you're being used by Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant is not putting out real evidence. But he's retweeting your comments in order to, what, save face? I don't know. So this is the man overall, Chris Bryant at the middle, ordained in the Church of England, London manager for Common Purpose. So he's going to be very closely linked to Cressida Dick, head of European Affairs, BBC, involved with the Labour movement for Europe, private secretary to Harriet Harman. Remember, this was the MEP linked into the paedophile information exchange saga, but also private secretary to Lord Faulkner of the Death Pathway fame. Mm-hmm. Nice jobs. He's involved with the National Youth Theatre, the Cooperative Party, Amnesty International, Amicus, and the Fabians. And of course, the Fabians believe in doing things by stealth. And well, there we are. Let's remember that we have those white underpants. We're still waiting to see whether we should give those to Chris Bryant. Now, on a question of judgment, I'm also going to say perhaps we should remember this, that Chris Bryant's election agent was jailed for collecting 12,000 pictures of the most serious child pornography police had seen. This was well publicised at the time. Now, of course, Chris Bryant didn't know. We understand that. But was this poor judgment in choosing his team? I think that's a reasonable question to ask.
Another reasonable question might be, was Stephen Carnell
Common Purpose? I don't know that, but that is a very interesting question. Well, we better move on to this one, because, of course, when it comes to transparency in the press, one of the people working to help gag it has been Chris Bryant himself, and this was the Sun's original report when they were doing the exposure of the Common Purpose role around Leveson.
And of course, Chris Bryant, not the only person involved in attempting to gag the press. Cressida Dick as well, another Common Purpose person trying to gag the press. Well, this sort of leads in nicely to what was going on yesterday at the Culture, Media and Sport Committee. Because they're basically telling the newspapers that they will comply with the spirit of Leveson, at least. They are saying that IPSO, this is the press regulator set up by the media, by the press, will need to be fully compliant with the terms of Leveson or within a year, or face the situation of punitive damages, which come as a result of Section 40 of the Crime and Courts Act. Now, the Crime and Courts Act passed by Parliament 3 years ago, and Section 40 is part of that. It has been passed, but it hasn't actually been invoked by the government since then. It says that publishers who are not part of a regulator, a press regulator, which is backed by the Royal Charter, which was set up by following Leveson, must pay both sides of the costs in a libel or a privacy case, even if they win the case. So even if they're found innocent in a, or not guilty in a libel case or in a privacy case, if they're not part of a regulator which is backed by the Royal Charter, they will be obliged to pay the costs of the other side. This is completely unconstitutional. It goes against every principle, constitutional principle upon which this country is founded. Now, Damien Collins MP is the committee of the Culture, Media and Sport, is the chairman of the Culture, Media and Sports Committee. And he said it's over 4 years since Lord Leveson published his report into the culture, practices and ethics of the press. In that time, we've yet to see established a system of independent self-regulation for print media that is credible both to the public and the press. In the vast majority of newspapers and magazines continue to refuse on principle to accept regulation under the terms of the Royal Charter, then the government should create an alternative path that would allow IPSO to become established as the preferred body to take responsibility of self-regulation of the press. So that comment is quite interesting, because although they're saying that basically if the newspapers don't comply within a year, they're going to invoke Article 40, they are saying that there is an option for IPSO other than to be come fully under the remit of the Royal Charter. So that's quite interesting. Well, what are we talking about here? There are two press regulators established following Leveson. One is IPSO, which is the Independent Press Standards Organisation, and that's the one that was established by most of the mainstream print media in the UK. A number of the FT and the Guardian aren't involved in that, for example. Most of them are, the independent aren't. But Impress is the other regulator. This was established through the Hacked Off campaign and the Media Standards Trust. It's promoted by the Hacked Off campaign and the Media Standards Trust. It has almost nobody as members. A few local newspapers is about all, but none of the major newspapers are members. But it is compliant with the Royal Charter, so they are pushing forward with trying to force everybody to join Impress rather than IPSO. Now, what's important about Impress, of course, is it is absolutely funded by Max Mosley. Max Mosley, who was head of the Formula One and so on, son of Oswald Mosley, the wartime fascist. Max Mosley, key part of the Leveson inquiry, because, of course, he was the man that was exposed in a number of newspapers dressed as a Nazi at some kind of orgy. And so he got behind the campaign for regulation of the press. So why are we mentioning this? Well, because if we look at the Register of Members' Financial Interests in the House of Commons as of the 20th of February 2017, we find that Tom Watson MP has had two extremely sizable donations from Max Mosley, one of £200,000 given in the middle of last year, and one of £300,000 given in January this year. So what we're looking at here is, on the 10th of February was the £300,000 one. So this is two massive donations to an MP, apparently to support Tom Watson's office as Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, and also, but this is the key point, also as Shadow Secretary of State for the Department for Culture, Media and Sport. And of course, the Department for Culture, Media and Sport has responsibility for regulation of the press. So this is a direct bung from Max Mosley, who's running the alternative Impress, the alternative regulator, the one that has the Royal Charter, but the one that nobody wants to get involved with. This money is going directly to someone who is Shadow Secretary of State for Department of Culture, Media and Sport. This is a pretty spectacular situation, Brian. And just to remind everybody, Tom Watson absolutely involved with the Hacked Off campaign. I supported it from the beginning. Although it's declared in the Register of Members' Interests, this has got to be a conflict of interest.
Well, we're seeing conflicts of interest everywhere. Every organisation we go into, whether it's Ofcom or it's other NGOs, you look at the number of jobs that the trustees have got or the executive team, and they are linked in everywhere. They cannot possibly be independent. And if we come onto that subject of language again, I think this is one of the reasons that when we look at their websites, the word independent is always emphasised. In fact, it's overemphasised. And I think this is to try and reassure us, calm us down that everything's OK. Exactly the same with this nonsense about the Russians interfering in elections. Oh, don't worry, because the researcher is independent. But they don't actually give any information about that researcher. Mm. Yeah.
OK, let's move on to justice then. And, well, Lord Leveson, once again, because, of course, he is president of the Queen's Bench Division. And although he ran that investigation into the press, this is his main role, the as Lord President of the Queen's Bench Division. Now, back in January 2015, he published this report on screen at the moment, The Review of Efficiency in Criminal Proceedings. And in it, he was arguing for the use of new technology in the judicial process with a view to reducing costs, or at least that was how he was describing it. He said, until recently, in order to conduct a hearing of any sort, all those involved in the process needed to gather in the same place, almost invariably a courtroom, in order for submissions to be advanced by the advocates or evidence to be given by witnesses, thereby enabling magistrates, judge or the jury to make decisions. With appropriate investment in equipment and infrastructure, new technologies are now available, which will provide a reliable and high-quality means of dealing with many, but clearly not all, aspects of criminal cases without requiring parties to travel to court. So he was subheading this section of that report, Video and Audio Hearings, the Default Position. He was calling for the use of video links to be the default position. But as we have highlighted, particularly with the Melanie Shaw case, all kinds of shenanigans can go on when people are not all in the same room at the same time. It's like taking an exam, perhaps, when you're remote from the examination body. There's no way to check whether you're cheating. And this is particularly dangerous, in my opinion. So why are we talking about this now? Because Liz Truss has launched the Prisons and Courts Bill. And she says that this bill will transform the lives of offenders and put victims at the heart of the justice system, helping to create a safer and better society. The bill is going to cover prison safety and reform, court reform, the judiciary, and whiplash compensation. But let's look at what they actually mean by the first couple of these. The bill paves the way for the biggest overhaul of prisons in a generation, delivery of a world-class court system. And right at the heart of this is the use of video and audio technology for hearings. So measures relating to courts underline a commitment to victims and the most vulnerable, as well as improving the system for those who use it every day. The use of virtual hearings will be extended, allowing victims to take part without running the task of coming face to face with their assailant. That's the icing on the cake, but the sweetener, as it were. But the key point here is that many hearings, such as bail applications, will be resolved via video telephone conferencing, allowing justice to be delivered more swiftly. Offenders charged with some less serious offences will be able to plead guilty online, accept a conviction, be issued with a penalty, and pay that penalty there and then. But the key point here is they are absolutely implementing the recommendations of Leveson with the use of technology. And of course, when you have video links in courtrooms, Brian, there is no oversight for the public. The public can't go and see the process of justice being done.
No, they can't see the person talking. They can't pick up the nuances that we all pick up from being able to speak face to face to an individual. And this is the start of a very, very dangerous, well, it's not a slippery slope, because what's driving it is a wedge. This is deliberate policy that's being brought in. But how cynical can you get? Don't worry, you didn't have a train ticket. You're actually going to be taken to court for that. But we can make the process all easy by video link, and you just plead guilty online. And you're a criminal, but you didn't have to appear in court. But don't worry, it's low cost and it's efficient. This is unbelievably dangerous stuff.
Absolutely. And of course, it'll also be easier for the judiciary to deploy judges more flexibly because, of course, they don't even have to come get out of bed, perhaps.
Well, this is dangerous as well, Mike. But we can also say we know there are judges out there who are very, very concerned about what they see as increasing chaos around them. What they don't understand is the chaos within the judicial system has been created to get these changes in place. But the moment people are not appearing in a proper court in front of a jury with the process of common law, we're entering very, very dangerous territory.
Absolutely. And that was that was one of the other aspects of Leveson's original report about criminal justice, that juries are basically feeling that in many cases their time is wasted and perhaps we shouldn't be using juries at all.
Because they're not intelligent enough to understand the real subjects that are being debated.
That is on its way. And when you put all these things together, it paints a pretty murky picture.
Yeah.
Okay. Intellectual property snooping. This is really about. So here we are. The government has launched a consultation into illicit IPTV streaming devices. This is basically people streaming content that they don't have permission to stream into their homes, many of these things being sold on eBay and other places. And what they're saying here is that the Intellectual Property Office is calling for views on whether there's a need for legislative change to deal with this issue. The use of IPTV boxes to access illegal content appears to have increased in recent months, they say. A range of legislation applies to both the sale and the use of these devices, but broadcasters and content owners have expressed concerns. So in other words, this is all being driven by the industry, and we're going to change the law potentially as a result, or perhaps we're going to do a lot more snooping. This is all to do with, and I cannot separate it from this, which is also released today, the consultation into the Investigatory Powers Act 2016. So what they're saying here is that they are launching a consultation. It's going to last for 6 weeks. Into the five new codes of practice under the Investigatory Powers Act. The codes are as follows: interception of communications, bulk communications data acquisition, bulk personal data sets, equipment interference, national security notices, and following considerations of the responses to the consultation, the codes will be laid before Parliament for approval. So those codes, the way that this Act is actually going to be implemented, are out for consultation at the moment. I suggest that people perhaps need to be providing evidence for that, but again, it's going to have to be high quality evidence. They're saying here that the Investigatory Powers Act, which gained royal assent in November, provides world-leading transparency and privacy protection. So we need to feel safe in our homes about this, but we can be snooped on safely.
Yeah, and the policy can be exported to the rest of the world. Well, just to end today, because really I think this is one of the most serious UK column news programmes that we have done. This is the British government forming itself into a dictatorship, immensely powerful, and with one of the most senior police officers in the country, Cressida Dick, heading the Metropolitan Police. What is her leadership style? Well, let's bring it up on screen. Here it is. This is the Common Purpose Manual. This is Beyond Authority, written by Julia Middleton, the Chief Executive of Common Purpose. I would encourage people to buy this book. Don't buy it as a new copy. That's a complete waste of money. Have a look for something very cheap, secondhand. Why do we need to read it? Because this is the lady who was let loose training civil servants, police, military, schools, school teachers, NHS. If you want to know why the agenda of the government and these organisations is so unpleasant and so dark, read Julia Middleton's book. So I'll just give a couple of quotes. She said, "The best leaders in the outer circles can create relationships in a nanosecond. They meet new people and before you know it, they've created an instant relationship that most people would take hours, if not days, to build. Many tell me that this is one of the stunning things that Tony Blair and Bill Clinton have in common." So there we are. Praise for Tony Blair and Bill Clinton. Praise for German bankers, praise for Lehman Brothers who collapsed. Lehman Brothers, Julia Middleton said, role model for young teenagers. Deutsche Bank now on the verge of collapse. all in this book. And if you want to get into the really unpleasant stuff, then have a listen to this. This is a gentleman called Doug Miller. I'm embarrassed to say he had a military background, apparently. He says you start with clear and defined objectives. This is the most important. Military training teaches you to understand this. Then you establish what the obstacles are. They could be structural, financial, but they're usually people. So you have to establish what motivates them and then decide if you can win them over by the power of the idea or by finding a fit where you can align both of your interests. If not, you look to form alliances or make compromises. Sometimes if it gets messy, you might have to run over them, undermine them, go around them, or discredit them. As a last resort, you consider bullying them or buying them off. And this is the advice, I'm going to say the sick advice of the leadership style which Common Purpose has injected into our police force and NHS. Is it any wonder we're now watching this very, very dark political agenda coming forth? That's it for today. Thank you very much for joining us. We will be back at the same time tomorrow. And I'm going to say thank you very much for the lady who called me yesterday afternoon from London. It was wonderful to have such praise for what we're doing. And it's wonderful to know that many people out there are getting a boost from listening to UK Column every day. If you're not a subscriber, please sign up and or make us a donation, because we can only do what we do with your help. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.